हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 42, chapter 10, The Nature of Fruitive Activity. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, "The qualities of the disciples are described. He should be devoid of possessiveness and should have strong affection for Guru and the Lord. He is not hasty in attaining his desired goal." So, it means if you're impatient, how you'll get the proper goal. Right? So we have that patience because you're dealing on the internal platform. Is that to perform your duties and then waiting for Krishna's mercy. So one's not impatient in that way.
Yes.
So on the spiritual, it works nicely. It's peaceful. And on the material also, you make your endeavor to perform your duties. But what results come, you're not, hasty. You do it properly, whatever comes in the way that's there. Of course, you understand the time frame, but does that make sense? Because impatience then will be something that will, one will not do the proper things because of that. Right? And you can't say, we're doing this, when am I going to get the results? So it's a matter of, it's going to come as you progress. Right? How do you say? Yes.
The difficulty seems to be is that we don't have a time frame as such. It's not set. Like Srila Prabhupada, he mentions one lifetime.
Yes.
Then some say three lifetimes.
No, but who's some? That's the thing. Is when Prabhupada says one lifetime, Bhagavatam at one point, I can't remember when it was, but I think it was last year or the year before, it said specifically one lifetime. And Bhagavatam itself, I think in the narration, and other places you have the one lifetime, so why introduce others? What's the need?
Because it seems like it's not possible within one lifetime.
But we're working on our material concept of how things work. If we're talking here, in connection with the sixth offense, to consider the glories of the holy name imaginary.
Yes.
So then when it says one holy name can destroy all the sins of the whole universe, that's not an exaggeration. So it's not that the process can't do it immediately. It's just a matter of us adjusting to it and accepting it. That's all. The process can work in a moment, literally. Like that. That we see. There are personalities who, in a moment, they fully surrendered and came to that perfectional platform. So it can be if we apply ourselves. So it's not that there's, the process takes this long. No, it doesn't. The process takes literally one moment. Because it's the natural position. So what slows it down is our commitment to it. So if we say it's not possible, what we're saying is, I'm not willing to or ready to or capable of surrendering and because of my attachments. That's what we're saying. But in actuality, the holy name can purify you immediately. Right? The evidence is Jagai Madai. Right? And so you're not going to get more sinful than that. That's the whole point of the pastime. Because you're not going to get more sinful than Jagai Madai. And they, when they surrendered, then immediately they became pure devotees. So it's just a matter of us being convinced. That's why we hear the philosophy from so many different angles and all that, so many different stories and that, just to convince us that it's possible. And when we commit to it, when we have the desire for it, then we see it moves faster because it's based on desire. Right? So when we want pure devotional service, we want a taste for the holy name. We want to give up, you know, attachment to seeing everything connected to sense gratification. We want to be able to see everything connected to the Lord, how Krishna is everything. He's in everything, you know, and everything's in Him. You know, that kind of thing, then it'll speed up. But it's our commitment to it. It's not that the process is slow. It's we're slow. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because if we make it, it's not possible, then we can sit back and go, well, I'm trying my best, but you know, it's a slow process. No, it's immediate, because it's the nature of the soul. Like how long does it take to remove the darkness from the room? Right? Just a moment. You move the curtains, you turn on the light. Now the guy who's in total ignorance and is in the bed and sleeping in, and it's 12 o'clock and he's planning to sleep until 6 o'clock in the evening, when you come to open the curtain, close this, that, freaking out. Like, but how long does it take? It's just a moment. So it's actually the individual that takes the time. And it's not a problem. You're given that time. Right? Because Krishna also is not hasty. Right? But, you know, he'll move it along as quickly as it can. Right? Because he doesn't have any ignorance to slow the process down. So that's the whole thing, is that coming up with these other things, it'll take 3 lifetimes. Why 3? Why? If we're talking about the rarity of it being, you have a vast ocean, and floating on the top of the ocean is a piece of wood with a hole in it, the driftwood. And on the bottom of the ocean, somewhere, there's a turtle. And at some point, turtles, you know, they can sit down there, I think, half an hour or something without breathing. Then they come up for air. And when that turtle comes up from somewhere on the bottom of that whole ocean, and comes up, and when he goes to get air, he sticks his head through the hole in that piece of wood that's just somewhere on the top of the ocean. That's the rarity of actually coming in contact with the bona fide guru. So why 3 lifetimes? You know? What was it, what was that devotee? In Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, said something happened, they told him, he asked, Mukunda. Again, M. So it's all M. He said a million lifetimes. And he started dancing, and actually, only 1 million lifetimes. Fabulous, you know, so. Why 3? You know what I'm saying?
Because of Bhagavad.
So what's, you're planning to be a deer or something? Is that,
I'm just saying.
The 3 lifetimes because of him. What about the Madhvas? I think it takes 14. You know what I'm saying? But why that? If we're taking, Bharat Maharaj took 3, but then that means you've gotten to the Uttam platform to fall down in the first one. Then you're fully conscious as a deer like that, then you're Jarabharat in the third life. So if you're going to say that, I can get to that, but wouldn't that be also, if you can get to that Uttam platform, why can't you just not fall down? You know, Bharat Muni already made the mistake. We learn from that. We don't fall down. So that means you could do it in one life. Or if we're taking, it would take 3 lifetimes to become a pure devotee, but then that means it would have to be more. Then you need 6, because you need 3 to get to the first lifetime of Bharat Maharaj. Then you can live those other 2. So I go technically 5. Does that make sense? So since it's given as 1, you work for it as 1. Because otherwise, if you say 3, people will relax. You know what I'm saying? Because 1 is possible. Not that necessarily it'll happen, but if you're not trying for it, then... Yeah.
Maybe this is the 3rd one?
Huh? Yeah, maybe this is the 3rd one. How do you know it's not the 3rd one?
Well, they're symptoms, I mean.
What? Haven't people called you an idiot? So then you could say, hey, see, here's the symptoms of Jarabar. Right? You know? He's not impressed. He's just thinking of all the times he got called an idiot. So, how much Jarabhard am I? Wow, okay, we add that all up. Then I'm gonna is that, so, in other words, we shouldn't worry about that. We should just worry about sincerely trying to please Krishna and doing the best we can. And then we leave it up to Krishna. Because the point is, remembering Krishna at the time of death. You can be a total neophyte, but if at the time of death you remember Krishna, you'll go back to Godhead. So you don't have to be an Uttamadikari to go back to Godhead. Right? But in the process of practicing, you can become an Uttamadikari while still in this body. But the point is all that's required is you remember Krishna at the time of death. You know, giving up all the attachments, this and that, don't worry. The Braj Leela has plenty of ways to take care of that. You know? Many attachments get lost when you find the whole place is on fire and you're going to die. You know, or, you know, a bull the size of, you know, his tail is up in the clouds. It moves the clouds, you know, like that. When he comes in, you know, things happen. Attachments are given up. Does that make sense? So it's geared for that. The process is geared for that. But to just say, oh, it's not possible, then the thing is we're pessimistic, then we'll have a tendency to, even people are advanced, to not see them as advanced. Because then that would be the question, is if someone says, no, it'll take at least 3 lifetimes like that, it's not possible. So then you would ask, do you feel that there's any advanced devotees now that could go back to Godhead this life? You might find they say no. So then are we dealing with an actual proper understanding? Because all it takes, Prabhupada, when they ask, did this devotee go back to Godhead? Prabhupada would simply say, if they remember Krishna, they go back to Godhead. And if they, you know, thought about material desires, they'll go to the heavenly planets. And if they're, you know, focused but distracted, then they'll be born in the family of devotees. So basically, a neophyte who thinks that Krishna will go back to Godhead, if he doesn't, he'll generally think of his neophyteness, so they'll go to the heavenly planets. Madhyamas, they'll either think of Krishna go back to Godhead, or if they don't, then they'll be born in the family of devotees. Right? And if you're out walking in the forest and some deer starts talking to you in Sanskrit, you know, like that, then okay, now we're dealing with, you know, a Jarabharat here. Like that. Because that would probably be nice. If they were Pekingese, I don't know if that would... It might do squeaky, the Sanskrit, whether they get it right or not. You know, like
Chinese.
Huh? Okay. Yeah. Is that so? In other words, it's not something we worry about. Sometimes I've been in conversations where they get into this, but it's just one of those you kind of sit back and just let it run until some other topic comes up, like, you know, when's lunch or something, and then you know, then get involved again in the conversation. is that because there's no benefit? Because one's supposed to be inspired. What's it? I can't remember what it was. We were just reading it. Yeah, I can't remember. The problem is talking about it's inspiration. Not repression. But he used a different word. But basically that's it. But I think the two match. So he says inspiration, not this word. You know how Prabhupada has those nice little phrases, you know? Is that okay? Yeah. So it's just one should be inspired. That's the thing. You have that faith. That's one of the symptoms in the opening of nectar devotion. You have that firm faith that you're performing devotional service, Krishna will give his mercy. But it's just a matter of when you're sincere enough that Krishna will be impressed that, you know, you get that full blessing. But it's not that there's a doubt like that. The process works. So if we stick to it, if we follow the order of the spiritual master, we stick to that, it will work. Right? Because the process is perfect. The name is perfect. The scriptures are perfect. The only wild card here is us. You know, and generally we want to find a reason. No, it's not possible means if I don't go back to Godhead because it's not possible. Does that make sense? Rather than I could have tried harder. Does that make sense? So you want to be inspired that no, it is possible, it can work. But you're not sentimental, that's why then you're not hasty. Is that, yeah.
This particular point that the two qualities being mentioned of the disciples, that he must have strong affection for the Guru. So basically when a disciple exhibits strong affection for the Guru, it is being read as being, you know, too fanatic and very much like hard-hearted also, because he's not exactly doing, you know, what
everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
So I mean, well, there's go ahead. So there's two aspects of that. Is that it's seen that, okay, if you have strong affection for the Guru, so then you're too fanatic, you're too hard-hearted because you don't take part in all the mundane social things that everybody else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So one is one you can check and see, are you actually sincere? Are you being fanatic? You know, like that. The other thing is you can find a new group of friends. That's the easiest. Because going back to Godhead is a lot more important than staying here with those so-called friends because they're into their social scene. But, you know, they'll call you hard-hearted, but what to do? You know? So, but the point is strong affection means you have faith in the instructions and you're applying those instructions. It doesn't mean that you're always up there and, you know, it's like a, you know, just trying to that proximity and always offering prayers, like we were saying, that one devotee, very nice devotee, when Prabhupada was going circumambulating temple in Vrindavan, then he would walk in front of Prabhupada, you know, walking backwards, facing Prabhupada with his hands folded and saying all kinds of glories and all kinds of that. So it is affection for Guru, but the point is taking the instructions. That's the thing. That's why you see the acharyas, they give how you apply that. So it's not that you're just there doing things for them and doing all that. It's a matter of you're taking the instructions and applying it. That's the better thing. Right? I mean, even have in the contemporary history that Ramses had his own son and he had Moses. He liked Moses more. Why? Because he actually did what Ramses wanted to get done. Well, his son used to just hang around. Like that. Yeah, so like that. That's the affection for Guru. Right? Sri Krishna continued. One should see one's real self-interest in life, in all circumstances, and should therefore remain detached from wife, children, home, land, relatives, friends, wealth, and so on. Mm-hmm. Like that. It seems to be a common list keeps coming up, right?
Yes.
Yes, a common theme. Yes.
It's strange.
Yes, yes. No, it's just a... Yeah, so that's what then keeps it working. Because, you know, the point came about was hard-hearted. But because in the Varnashram, you follow duties. Right? So then what are the duties with the wife, the children, the home, the land, the relatives, the friends, the wealth, and so on? Those are performed. And being performed in goodness, how can they not be nice? Right? If you're performing your duties with detachment, it's got to be nice. Right? So, being done with bhakti, it's always nice. So if we see it's hard-hearted, that means the devotion has to be increased. There's something there that they're controlling the senses, but they're not seeing that connection to Krishna. And so that makes the heart a little bit hard. Like that. But at least then they're trying. What's the problem if someone tries? Right? Yeah, what is it that... better to, what is it, have loved and lost than to never have loved at all, right? You know, you know, or, you know, shoot the rhinoceros. You know, even if you fail, it's like, well, what did you guys do? You know, you shot the gossip, right? We went out to shoot the rhinoceros. You know, so you try. Because Krishna remembers these things. Krishna keeps account of all these things. He doesn't forget. That's the thing. His memory is good. Ours is not so good. Yeah. Krishna says in Gita, he remembers all of them. Well, we don't even remember this one. Like that. That's the...
When we say to see our real self-interest, means always our connection with Krishna?
Yes, because that's real self-interest. Because other things aren't actually self-interest. They may be the body interest, they may be the mind, they may be the intelligence, the false ego, but or the polluted consciousness. They're not actually the living entity. So the whole point is that at this point, we should be able to see it in its non-dry position.
Yes.
Right? The second canto, when it's introduced strong, you might seem to have that dryness, and then it, you know, gets a little bit, you know, less dry when it gets into the third and as it goes up. But it should be here as we can discuss it without it bringing out issues and all those things and, oh, but this is dry. It should just be, we can appreciate that this is just the practical of applying it into our life. These are the points we have to focus on.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
So we need to have some little test at least for the relation with
Krishna. Yes. Well, that's the idea of the 10th canto, is you're supposed to get a taste there. Yes. You know, some kind of taste. You know, this is nice. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. By what type of consideration does lack of possessiveness take? One should neutrally see one's possessions as gold and silver. One should have possessiveness only until attaining what is necessary for survival, and not longer than that. Footnote 10. This is converbed in Srimad Bhagavatam 1-10. Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation. Since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth, nothing else should be the goal of one's works. Contemporary scholars also confirm that though emotional well-being arises with income, there is no further progress beyond an annual income of $75,000.
Which year?
That depends upon what it means. Where I'm sure that what they're looking at here is where the actual improvement in your actual practical lifestyle is not, because once you go beyond this, then the amount you have to work means even though you have more stuff, you can't, you may, below 75,000, you don't own a yacht. You go above that, you can own a yacht, but how often can you be on that yacht? Right? So that's the whole thing, is that at some point here, so, so this must be some thing where they've studied that those above 75 aren't getting any more happiness than those, you know, below this. No, in other words, if you want a list, a direct, practical, tangible list of the, you know, most miserable people on the planet, you just get yourself a copy of the Forbes 500. Right? You know, as a start. Right? And definitely they all have above 75,000. Mm. Otherwise, you know, I'm not sure what's the minimum for be on their list, but it's way above 75. Right? Right? I'm amazed that people are telling me that you go into this and you can start off here and then, you know, you can get $18 an hour and stuff like that and then work up, you know, 25 and all that. And I was thinking, strange, nothing's changed, because as a kid, I was working on a thing at 12 because we were kids. And then they said if you went into it professionally, you'd get 20 an hour. And that was in, you know, early 70s. So I'm thinking, the inflation's gone up ridiculously, but actually the amount of people get is less than what it used to be. Because at that time, then 12,000, you were fine. You know, you were, you know, very comfortable middle class. You know? So now it seems that that comfortable middle class is at 75.
In India only it changes.
Sorry?
It changes in India only. It changes rapidly in India.
Yes, but the point is that are we talking about, you know, our friend in Bihar, Mr. Yadav, or are we talking about the people from cultured backgrounds? You understand? Yeah. So the whole thing is it comes down to is that you have to know what to do with these things. And then those who know what to do with them, then they're giving in charity, they're performing their worship, they're doing all these things. Then the money stays. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So then they can use it. They know what to do with it. Their culture, they are not so attached. They see, they need these things, they do. They don't buy extra stuff. The guy that's buying extra cars just because he can, that's not the guy we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the guy is, the family only needs 15 cars. They don't need more. He won't buy one more. He could buy one more, but he doesn't. You know what I'm saying? But they need 15. Like that. You know, it's big family, so. Somebody says, yeah. So it, you have to see the culture and everything else like that. But we're just saying the mundane scholars have seen there's no improvement in the quality of life even if you go above 75,000. You know, it's like somebody was what you were saying today? Yeah. That they did occupations in the world. Who is the most happy? Which occupation? And they find out it's hairdressers. Like that. There's a good chance they're making less than 75,000. Right? Like that. So that's the whole point. It's there's the idea if you make more money, you'll be happier. But it doesn't work. So
when money is devoid of possessiveness, implies...
If when one is?
Devoid of possessiveness, or tries.
Devoid of possessiveness, okay.
Then, it means that he's decreasing his controllership mentality.
Yeah, it means the ownership is the main. Because when you ownership, because with ownership, then you have the idea, I control it, I enjoy it. Why do you want possession? I like something, so I want to control it, so I can, you know, as a regular thing, enjoy it. Just like, let's say, you do something, you go to someone's house, and they, you know, do something at the program. And you're impressed by that, and you enjoyed that. So then you want to get whatever that was that they had. Mm-hmm. But how often will you use that? It'll go on to the shelf with all the other very important, you can really enjoy yourself with them things. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And then when you take Vanapras, it's kind of like, where did all this junk come from? You know, like that.
Yes. So then giving in charity.
Yes, so if you can give it in charity, that's good. That's called, that's what the next generation's for. You hand it all over to them, and then you go on pilgrimage. Okay, one should view one's wife and children similarly. One should not have possessiveness because one sees that possessiveness is an impediment to full surrender to the Lord. The son of Chitraketu said, just as commodities and coins pass among many people, the jiva wanders into various wombs with various fathers and mothers. It is seen that the relationships of one object with many people are temporary. As long as the relationship lasts, one has possessiveness of the object, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.16, 6-7. But one should not lack possessiveness of Guru and the Lord. Thus it is said one should have firm attachment to them. That's where the attachment is.
Yes.
Right? So as long as one has attachment for wife, children, homeland, and that, you'll think it's fanatic if someone has attachment to and possessiveness to Guru and the Lord. That's why I said easier to change friends. Right. So the whole point is one should neutrally see one's possessions such as gold and silver. Means gold has a value. And you take care of it as such. You protect it as such. Because gold being that, people will walk off with it. Right? So you take care of it. But what's gold for? You can make ornaments. It can be used as money, as things like this. Silver you can do so many things with. So you see gold for its value as gold. You don't see it as something else. So in the same way, you see your house for simply the value the house has. What you can do with the house. What you can do with the car. What you can do with the family. That's as much as you see. So it doesn't require possessiveness. It requires a sense of duty. Right? Because we'll have the thing, oh, there's no possessiveness, so he leaves the gold laying around. No, because it's your duty towards gold to put it away. Does that make sense? So that's the problem, being in the mode of goodness, this understanding. You know, so because it's favorable for pure goodness, we're not used to it coming from backgrounds of passion and ignorance. Yes. Right? We only say passion because that's what gives it that little bit of movement. Is that no.
Yeah. Optimistic?
Yeah, it is more optimistic. Yeah. Yes. Does that make sense? Because you're trying to become attached to Krishna, see everything connected to Krishna. So when you see it's all connected to Krishna, you're attached to Krishna. Therefore, you deal with everything nicely because it's connected to Krishna. So why you won't do your duties? Why you won't behave nicely? Why everything won't work smoothly? Does that make sense? You know, just that interim state till you get there might be a little unsteady. But,
okay. But Maharaj, it seems that this is all the quality of the disciple, you know?
Yes.
Free for false prestige, or whatever they think.
Yes,
this is
yes.
The goodness.
These are all there. In other words, these are the things to focus on, not, oh, if we get knowledge and skill on yes. mundane activities, yes. that will make, you know, ISKCON great again.
Yes.
Like that. And the fun part is people who say that wouldn't like the person who says that. Like that.
Yes.
Right? So that's the whole point, is that's not what we'll make. It's developing these qualities. Because then it works nicely. Then you have community. Because otherwise, whatever knowledge and skills you develop, someone else will have something completely different. And depending on who they learn from, whatever you know is totally bogus. You know, really. You know what I'm saying? It's like, how many universities you've gone to one school, and somehow or another you have to move or something, and you want to bring all your credits with you. Many schools won't accept them at all. Nothing. Some will give you a little bit. You know, you've studied, 2 years, you have the last year to go, they'll give you 6 months.
Yes.
You know. So, the point is, we're saying, oh no, but if you do all these things, the karmic does, it'll be fabulous. Just like with the karmis, it's fabulous. Right? They have the perfect community, perfect, wonderful world, whatever it is. I think that we moved on from the new world order, right? It didn't seem to work, so... that didn't work, and the other utopians didn't work, and they've always been, Shangri-La, probably most, anybody knows, has heard of Shangri-La? Okay, most people haven't, right? So then Shangri-La's out the window, like that. So what's Shangri-La? It's some place in the... hidden somewhere in the Himalayas, that's like the perfect community. Everybody's perfect, everything's perfect, and it's all perfect. No, they didn't have beards like that. Yeah, it was some kind of more of a yoga-ish, oriental-ish kind of mishmash of whatever whoever wrote the story thought was important. One of those where you go through the trek through the snow and the blizzards and the storm and you're about to die, and then you finally come across this little cave and there it is, and when you walk in then there's this perfect, tropical, yeah. But people still die there, but what to do?
Imagination.
Yes, it's all imagination, yeah. Right. Then you have the little prince, right? But his plan is so small he can walk around it in about 2 seconds, that like that. But, right? Sri Krishna continued, just as fire, which burns and illuminates, is different from firewood, which is to be burned, to give illumination, Similarly, the seer within the body, the self-enlightened spirit soul, is different from the material body, which is to be illuminated by consciousness. Thus, the spirit soul and the body possess different characteristics and are different, separate entities. Right? So, the body is valuable. We're not saying it's not, but it's as valuable as firewood is that for burning.
Yes.
But the illumination is not the firewood. It's the fire. But it burns on the firewood. So this knowledge of the body and detachment from the body and the mode of goodness and duties and all that, those then burn on the body. Right? And it creates self-realization. When the self-realization is there, that's the point where now you don't need a material body. You can now function in the spiritual body quite happily. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj, we earlier saw how Krishna, you know, he sent Uddhava to Vrindavan and put the message. And just for the reason that he should know what is the love of the gopis and which is the topmost. So it was all about rasa, you know, that he wanted to introduce to Uddhava. And now we
find
that many other things. But
okay.
Yeah. But and now we find that basic philosophy, which is already aware of,
Then why have we slowed down?
No, no, Uddhava. So I'm speaking of Uddhava. So
yeah, but why is it in this position? I mean, why are we getting stuck on this point of where is it? Previous page.
Wife,
children, home, land, relatives, friends, wealth, and so on.
And so on.
Right?
Because of the soul.
Hmm?
Because of the soul.
Yeah. So that's why it's here. You're not catching that. Okay. Another angle is he told the story of this, you know, avatut. And so this avatut, he's transcendental to modes of nature. And he's moving in society. He can explain things he can do, but at the same time, he can be completely aloof. So those qualities that he has to be situated there as a practice, that's what's being explained here. So we can, yes, we've had knowledge, but do we have, is, you know, the point of where it's practically applied to get that position? So in other words, that has been tasted. This is the lifestyle of someone who's tasted that. He wants to give a message to the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan. And then, by Uddhava taking it there, he'll get that benefit. It was just a plan, so he wants to contact the Vrajvasis. And so he can get that benefit. What is there? Because he'll think whatever he's doing is the best, then he finds out there's more. That creates those humbleness and all those things. Then you appreciate the Vaishnavas. So this is the culture and lifestyle of someone who's like that. Does that make sense? Because it's not just about it's rasa. The point is because we can't discuss rasa. We can discuss the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord. We can't discuss rasa. We can discuss about it. It's just like, let's say, can we discuss the experience and taste of lunch? No, you can discuss about lunch, what was cooked, what was nice, what was inspiring, what, all these different things. But the actual experience you got, it's impossible to discuss. So the point is you're talking those things that people can use, devotees can use in their life to make sure, because otherwise we go on to these things. We're discussing the other things like that. Yeah, I mean, some temples don't do 11th and 12th canto.
Yes.
Right, they go up to 10, 13, and then start back at 1.
Yes.
Because they say it's not Prabhupada's book. So it just depends upon who's making the arrangement. Like that. Of course, they internet mostly isn't Prabhupada's books either, but hey, that's cool. But
sometimes no translation. Sometimes no translation.
Yeah, there's no translation, but I'm talking about the ones that in the that speaking, they're going to have an English book speaking in English and like that. So it's just not something that's there. So you see, third canto, fifth canto, you know, 11th canto, these are, you know, not very well, they're not your popular cantos, let's say that. So then the point is, but these are the things to do. These are the things to focus on. But instead, we focus on other things, because it's been said before, how to engage yourself in the Lord's service, by your position, by your, you know, guna and karma. And so then that's been taken. But then that secondary aspect, we get distracted by that, as opposed to the purpose of that, to develop love for Krishna. Right? And so then we start thinking that all these secondary attributes, then the more they're developed, then the better devotional service will be. When actually it's the other way around. The more we're developed in devotional service, the better those things will be. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, I think it was Hansa Duda Prabhu. Then there was a big Mayavadi. I think he was Tamil, but he was situated in Sri Lanka, I think. And I think he'd come over and that. He was very famous. And at one point, there was some program or something. I don't remember how it was. Detail on, I think it may have been, it was something official. I don't think it was just they bumped into each other. And in that, Hansa Duda defeated him in argument. And this guy's a big Mayavadi, probably knows Sanskrit, and you know, the whole thing. But he defeated him. Why? Because he has that faith in Krishna, that devotion. Right? But now we would say, oh, we need to learn all the grammar, all the this, all the that, then only we can discuss and all that, and I guarantee you, you will not be able to defeat them. Right? But by devotion, then Krishna gives the intelligence, and you can. So that's the whole thing. We're thinking that if I learn this, then I'm independent, and then I can actually do devotional service. When it's no, it's Krishna reveals. So that's the difficulty. So that's why then these things are important. So it brings us back to understanding what actually we have to do. Otherwise, we get distracted and think, you know, we're engaging our propensities. But still, there must be a scientific method in doing that. Right? Otherwise, why is it it's all about feelings these days and we're not talking devotional? Right? Well, those conversations would never come up before. I mean, absolutely never. They just wouldn't. And if it did, they would be immediately stopped. You know what I'm saying? So why? Because we're not studying these things that then bring out the actual point. That what we're actually supposed to, you're supposed to be chanting and be meek and humble. That's the whole point. Surrender means that last state of being meek and humble. Right? Because if you identify as a servant of Krishna, right, not something else, then you can be meek and humble. Because if I identify as my conditioning, then how can I be meek and humble? You can't be. Then, if I'm meek and humble, then I can accept of following the rules and regulations, avoiding what I should avoid, and practicing what I should to the best I can. Then I can see, if I can do that, then I can see that Krishna is the maintainer, he's the protector. Right? Not that my knowledge and skill and my job and my professionalism, that's what's going to maintain me and that's what's going to protect me. No, I engage that in Krishna's service if that's my nature. But the point is there's plenty of people who have all those qualifications and things don't go well for them. So it has nothing to do with that. They're not finding that that's the connection. Then if you surrender to Krishna where he's your protector, maintainer and protector, then you're able to, fully identify as Krishna's servant. Because if you made that surrender, then that is your mentality. And then that humility and meekness is in the servants of Krishna. Understand? That's surrender. It doesn't have other parts. Does that make sense?
So Maharaj, in Varna and Ashram, one must more focus on the Ashram side to improve.
Varna and Ashram, one must focus. Because Varna means social.
Yes.
Ashram means spiritual. Yes. So of course the spiritual has to be focused on.
It's exactly opposite now.
It's the opposite now, but it's not within the context of Varna Ashram. Mm-hmm. So it's the opposite and drop it down a notch. Because then it becomes speculative. Because guaranteed, when they started that survey on who's the most satisfied and happy in their occupation, that they did not, on any day of the week, expect that it would be, you know, those, what do you say? Hairdressers. You know, they probably would have thought, you know, middle management or, you know, CEOs or, you know, stuff like that. But then when they find out that it's not. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that we have our idea and then there's reality. So the idea is that within reality, there have your ideas. But to have your ideas in opposition to or instead of reality, what's the point? There's millions of karmis that are doing way better at that kind of so-called reality than us. Right? I mean, there's tons of them. Whatever is the best we have on the material platform, there's guys better than that, you know? Way better. I mean, like, ridiculously way better. Right? You know, like, you don't even know they exist way better. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, one should not think the body is the self. The Atma, the giver of consciousness, the seer or perceiver, is different from the subtle and gross bodies made of dull matter, which are objects of perception. Right? So we can perceive the gross and subtle bodies. They're objects of perception. Right? The jiva has a small amount of consciousness. The Atma, which perceives itself, Swadrik, is different from material objects, which are its objects of perception. Right? So the soul can perceive that they are different from what they're perceiving. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what we're talking about. Right? So that kind of thing, because if you can tell the difference, then you can tell I'm servant of Krishna, then you can surrender to Krishna. But if you can't tell the difference between the body and the soul, then, or the subtle body and the soul, like people say, well, what about me? You know, all this, but where am I in all this? And who's this I? And guaranteed 1008%, it's not the soul. Like that. If you want even higher, 10,000 a day. You know? Round it up to a lakh eight. You know, so as you like. But the point is, it's not that. So then how are they going to be able to taste that rasa that Uddhava appreciated when he went to Vrindavan? Because if you can't tell the difference between yourself as the soul and the body, you're not going to be tasting much of Braj Bhav. Yeah, it's just not happening. But by Prabhupada's mercy, he makes it accessible so that you think, maybe I should focus more that way. So by hearing the Krishna book stories, then hearing the Bhagavatam stories, then we think, yes, I want to be like that. And because you've thought like that, then Krishna remembers that. And he arranges it. It's just how long it'll take. As we started out the discussion today. You know, so it's... Thus, how can the Atma think the body is itself? Though Paramatma is also self-perceiving, the jiva is perceived by the Paramatma. Though jiva is revealed by Paramatma, jiva also has some power to reveal. Though gold and silver are illuminated by the sun, they have some power of illumination as well. Right? But it's because of their connection to the sun. Yes. You see, there's some little bit there. So therefore, having come in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, Then, now, by that self-contemplation, then we can actually start to understand. But we're still working with that light from the sun.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
We are not the light.
Yeah, we're not the light. Even though some say, no, you are the light. Be the light. Okay. Sri Krishna continued. Just as fire may appear differently as dormant, manifest, weak, brilliant, and so on. Oh, okay. According to the condition of the fuel, similarly the spirit soul enters the material body and accepts particular bodily characteristics. Footnote 11. In this regard, there's a poem about firewood from the 1930s by, I'm not sure how you'd say it, but Celia Congreve. Okay. Beechwood fires are bright and clear if the logs are kept a year. Chestnuts only good, they say, if for logs 'tis laid away. Right? So in other words, you got to put them away a long time. Birch and fir logs burn too fast, blaze up bright, and do not last. Elmwood burns like churchyard mold. Eyne, the very flames are cold. Right? It's just goes along really slow, like that, yeah. Popular gives a bitter smoke, fills your eyes and makes you choke. Oaken logs, if dry and old, keep away the winter's cold. Right? So they create the most heat. But ash wet or ash dry, a king shall warm his slippers by. Yes. Just as different types of wood hold various potentials for types of fire to manifest, different types of bodies hold various potentials for the soul to illuminate in specific ways. Okay. So we've heard from authority.
This must be Sutra Maharaj, isn't it?
I'm not sure who this one would be, but in any case...
Yes, he
came in. Uh-oh. Okay. So that's the whole thing. But we also see that this principle it's there. It's according to the nature of the body, that's what it can do. What your conditioning is, that's what it can do. It can't do more. This idea, no, you can do whatever you want. You're free. You choose. You're the lord of your destiny and this and that. They say all that. And what's the whole point of them saying that? There's something you have to buy after that. Because they have a course or they have some gizmo or gadget or situation in which you can do that. Some retreat, some like that. But in reality, or it just makes you feel good. Right, you're the lord of your destiny. Yes, you choose what you want. You think about it, attract it in the universe. It's all about you. Yeah, nice, but may take a few lifetimes. Right? Does that make sense? Because from thinking, why it will start? Because you think, then you feel, then you will, then you'll actually do the thing that will get you that prosperity you're looking for. But it starts by thinking about it. But until it gets to the point you act in that, you're not going to get it. So, you know, we say that too. That's Prajumna. You think about it. Krishna says, you think about something, then for a time you get attached. Right? And then from that attachment, that's where the endeavor comes in. Srila right? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Just as one mistakes the qualities of wood, such as its tendency to be destroyed, to be those of fire, though the qualities of wood do not actually reside in fire. One mistakes the qualities of the body, such as perishable nature, to be those of the soul. Fire entering wood seems to assume qualities like destruction. The Atma, Paraha, entering the body, assumes qualities of the body, such as destruction, out of man's misconception. Just as fire is said to take various forms, such as birth, death, small or big, the Atma is said to take birth and die. Though there are many different jivas, one jiva such as the devata attains variety by accepting various types of body, one after another, or simultaneously, such as devatas or yogis. Right? So, we take on the body, jiva enters the body, then they identify with the body, then they take on those qualities. But they don't. The soul is not temporary, the soul doesn't have to be affected. Right? Yeah. Not that the body is not annoying, but you don't actually have to be affected. Right? Not in your Krishna consciousness. Right? You may not be able to win that marathon, you know, like that. But the point is you can be Krishna conscious. Sri Krishna continued. The subtle. The subtle and gross material bodies are created by the material modes of nature, which expand from the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Material existence occurs when the living entity falsely accepts the qualities of the gross and subtle bodies as being his own factual nature. Right? Because that's not what it is. That's Maya. This illusory state, however, can be destroyed by real knowledge. Therefore, by the cultivation of knowledge, one should approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead situated within oneself. By understanding the Lord's pure transcendental existence, one should gradually give up the false vision of the material world as independent reality. It's not independent. It's that this is... It's functioning on the Krishna's laws. So therefore, seeing everything connected to Krishna and everything for Krishna's satisfaction, therefore, then we are engaged in Krishna's service.
Yes, yes.
Then we're always Krishna conscious because you're always in Krishna's place.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
And now, the 60 to the fees, they all consider that they're independent reality.
Yes.
Yes.
Because it's not dependent upon the Lord. So therefore it's an independent reality. Because as it says here, the gross and subtle material bodies are created by the material modes of nature, which expand from the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yes.
Who's talking?
Krishna.
So he's just saying this is the way it is. But when he is a person, he'll talk about God. It means,
yes,
you know, it's about Vishnu.
Yes.
Like that. You know, or, you know, and then he comes as Paramatma and like that. So he'll always do, like with Arjuna in the Gita, he also does the same. You know, so that's the... So he says that this is what it is. So one should gradually give up that false vision by cultivating that relationship with the super soul. One sees who you are, relationship with the super soul. Then one gives up that independent reality, because there isn't such a thing as an independent reality. Right? Like that. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, knowing the Atma, completely untouched, Param, situated within the gross and subtle bodies, by careful analysis, one should gradually give up material thinking in relation to the body by increasing sadhana. Right? So that's how it's going. Sadhana is actually what's going to create the point. So then you balance that with everything else, because you have duties. So if you can do more sadhana, you do. But if you have to, you know, do just the basic sadhana because you have other aspects to perform, then you balance that. But the point is, it's the sadhana that's going to make everything increase.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to increase your devotion. That's going to increase your good qualities. That's going to increase your intelligence. And that means even on the material platform, you'll do better.
Mm-hmm.
So if you actually want to be more professional, have better sadhana. Right, so that means you're hearing, you're chanting, you're associating with the devotees, worship the deity, living in the dharma. These things are what you increase.
Yes.
That will make everything else work. And if you try to independently do them, then that's like trying to water the leaves.
Yes.
You know? You can have a whole theory about water, the leaf hydration and this and that, but it's not going to work.
So Maharaj Sadhana help us to come to the goodness and pure goodness.
Yes.
And no sadhana means actually.
No sadhana means it'll be ignorance with that enough passion to get you moving around. So, you know, the leaders of the world, there's a little bit more passion. So that's why they're glorified. And everybody else, it's a lot more ignorance. So that's all. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you have a car. A lot of ignorance, right? Like that. Then you have the engine. And in the engine, there's a little bit of fire. And that moves the whole car.
Yes.
But the proportion of the volume of area that fire happens compared to the whole car.
Yes.
Yeah. Does that make sense? You know. So, yes, okay, if you have a 6-liter car, then there's a little bit more fire, you know, as opposed to the 500. But, you know, that's why it's considered, you know, fancier this and that and all that. But it's still, the proportion's only a touch more. Is that nice? You know, because as you add that fire, you add on more ignorance. Because you have to, despite popular conception, the yacht is unconscious dead matter. You know what I'm saying? So you're adding on, there's more fire, but then because of that it's production, then you add on more. Right? Like I remember, what was it? How'd you say? Can't remember exactly. It was somewhere between, I'm trying to remember where it was. It was it's somewhere between when the meteor hit, the dinosaurs went extinct, you know, and maybe Robespierre or something. It's somewhere in there, you know, like this. That they had, the computers were coming out, and they had I think they started with the 86. Right? Then the 186, the 286. Then they got to the 386, and they were using all the DOS and all the things. It was really, you know, it was really slow. You turned the thing on, you had to sit there, and, you know, you could probably do a pedicure and a manicure by the time it was ready to go, right? You know, so then when it came up, because the computers hadn't developed so much, but the programming had, they came out with a 486. And I remember the first time I saw that, then, you know, in Jaipur Dakumar's office, because he was always up to date on these things. And so they turned it on, and the thing, how quickly it would go through, it was like in a matter of like 1 second, it went through all the stages. It was like amazing, just like that. And you think, wow, okay, now we can do something. But then the problem is as soon as they figure out how much it can do, then they add on a whole ton of stuff that makes it as slow as it was back when it was DOS. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. It just the more the fire you put, the more ignorance they drag behind. That's all. So that's the thing. It's like, I'm better because I'm dragging more ignorance than you. My ignorance is bigger than your ignorance. You know. So yes.
I was thinking that devotees, they face the difficulty to balance between shreyas and prayas.
Yes.
And we know shreyas, it's in the mode of goodness or devotion, and that takes a lot of time.
Yes.
But then we need prayers also just to continue. We need some immediate satisfaction. We need some instant, kick or something that gives us that energy to achieve prayers.
That's why God made refrigerators. You just open the door and there it is.
So is that like okay?
Okay, let us take the principle of it. Then it is something there to work with. But what Krishna is describing here, because he doesn't say that you're giving up. He says don't be attached to wife and family and house and wealth and so on.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? That means that when you have the shreyas and the prayas, then it's two paths, right? The nivriti and pravriti. So taking that nivriti path, that always has to be understood. It's always about Krishna. It's about giving up the material focus and focusing on Krishna. So then within that, you can take the path of pravriti or nivriti within that. So householders, then it seems it's pravriti, but it's within the context of nivriti. So they have all those things. So in the Vedas, all these things are already written in anyway. So we don't have. That's why Prabhupada and the Acharyas and Krishna says it's imperative that you follow. You know, when Krishna gives these direct instructions like this, you see he always will mention varnashram. Performance of duties varnashram constantly. Whenever he's speaking, he'll always mention it. So that's because it's already written in. But if we are, have a serious, allergy to varnashram, then the problem is then it appears that it's not written in. Because somehow or another that sandwich at midnight is not written into when I'm sitting down and chanting my japa in front of the deity. So somehow or another that connection can't be made. Does that make sense? So that's the problem is that varnashram already includes these things. Right? You know, it's just like we're saying, oh, but we need variety. It's already included in there. Like Ayurveda. Then you have the dinacharya, so what you eat at what times of the day. So what you eat at breakfast is not what you eat at lunch, or is not what you eat at dinner, or what is not what you eat at snacks. It's different. There's different things, what you eat at the time of the day. So it already gives variety. Even though you're eating the same thing, it will come out different because of the timing and therefore how the preparations are. So if you follow that, already there's variety. Then you follow the ritucharya, means according to season. So according to the season, you have things that, like what you do this season, there's another season where that you don't do at all. Like one season you favor things that are you know, rich and unctuous and like that, and other seasons you avoid that. Other, you know, some season you take things that are fermented and not like yogurt and that, other seasons you don't. You understand? So it's already written in that you're going to get variety. You're going to, because taste is in variety, right? And so that's the whole thing. Like Prabhu said, is that people, you know, and people in India, they can do things with it. This may apply to the Western lifestyle, but not in the Indian, because they know these things. They know how to make that variety, so they have that taste. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then, it's written in there how you spend that time and all these different things. It mentions these things. Shastra says, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, we'll take it. Okay, sadhana is strict and dry, right? But the Shastra doesn't say like that. You know, it talks about things. Like, remember when we were going through, I think it was 6th canto. It was mentioning in those different things. I think it was Priyavrata and his wife. And it was talking how they would have those joking words and everything like that. We also saw in the 90th chapter, then Prabhupada was talking about, you know, how Krishna and his wives and how they would deal and all that. And so it's all about just the little interactions, the little things like that. It's already written in. But the point is it only works if someone takes the masculine role, someone takes the feminine role. Then it works. You know, it's just like, you know, you can't play, you know, how you say? You can't play a game unless everyone does their part. You know? Does that make sense? You know, if you have to play and everybody wants to be Jesus, it's not going to work. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the problem, is that you have to play the different roles. Then you get taste. But the modern thing is, no, whatever I perceive as taste, I take that. And just because I've taken it, that should give taste. But no, only in relationships you get taste. And we're ignoring that. And that's what Varnashram's defining. And so then it's already written in. So this idea is that the sadhana, you know, focusing that. Because that this means is that before this, sadhana simply meant more the external, what you did with the body. But now it's showing the sadhana of what you're doing with the consciousness, with the mind, the intelligence, yes. The identity. Yes. So it's a sadhana, you see everything connected to Krishna. You see it as all as his energies. Yes. Does that make sense? So in other words, we're bringing out more this aspect of jnana yoga. Though, once situated in engaging in the activities of karma. So that's why then we call it buddhi yoga. But the person's advanced. The first 6 cantos are basically showing how karma yoga works. Mm-hmm. Then after that, they're showing how pure devotional service works. Right? Does that make sense? Not that those in the first cantos aren't pure devotees, but just the emphasis, what they're bringing out, is how to connect everything to Krishna. Then from 7th canto, it's starting to show that even though you've connected to Krishna, it's got to be more about Krishna than about what you're connecting. And now they're showing, if you're detached from what you're connecting, then you can be nicely Krishna conscious. So it's just the analytical side. So, yeah. So it's already there. That's Krishna doesn't want to see the living entities suffer. It's already there in the Vedic culture. But the point is, you have to be detached. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, we're all good. Sri Krishna continued, "The spiritual master can be compared to the lower kindling stick, the discipline to the upper kindling stick." Okay. This is the, what do you call it? Yeah. Arani. And the instruction given by this guru to the third stick placed in between. The transcendental knowledge communicated from guru to disciple is compared to the fire arising from the contact of these, which burns the darkness of ignorance to ashes. Right? Because it also says in the Upanishad, right, that the guru is the, I think, yeah, whatever. One's the upper element, one's the lower element, and then the connection is instruction. So it's the same thing here in the Arani. You have the piece of wood on the bottom that has a hole in it, and then you have the stick itself that you put the rope around that you churn, and then you have the one on top that you push. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So it has also holes, so it all matches. So the point is, the bottom stick and the top stick, or piece of wood, they are connected through the action of the middle stick. That's the instruction.
Yes. Yes.
So the guru is giving instruction, disciples following instruction. That's what then creates the fire of spiritual knowledge that destroys or burns up material existence.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. The transcendental knowledge communicated from guru to disciples compared to the fire arising from the contact of these, which burns the darkness of ignorance to ashes, bringing great happiness both to guru and disciple. By submissively hearing from an expert spiritual master, the expert disciple develops pure knowledge. So when you say, well, where's this expert spiritual master? What does the rest of the sentence say? Expert disciple.
Yes.
So if you can prove you're the expert disciple and you can't find an expert spiritual master, okay, we'll listen to your discussion. But if you're saying there's no expert, until there's an expert spiritual master, I can't surrender, we're dealing with a gross, bottom-rung neophyte. Absolutely. A fault finder. In fact, someone in the mode of ignorance, you should avoid them by the instruction of Kapila Muni. He says those who are performing devotional service in the mode of ignorance, you're pleasant. You do all the proper etiquette, but you do not associate with them. Right? Because it says here, expert spiritual master, expert disciple. It's always balanced. Not this fault finding thing as well. Only when there's someone perfect, then I become my holiness can only then consider possibly surrender. What's that called? Delusion. Yes, my delusion of grandeurness. You know, cannot surrender until So that's the whole point. Is it always balances. We always focus on the spiritual master, just like in the conversation, it's always what the women are supposed to do, never what the men are supposed to do. So it's always what the spiritual master is supposed to do, not what the disciple.
It's because of envy.
Yeah, it's there. I mean, but we come to the material world due to envy, so that's not it's standard. So we don't emphasize the point, we're just showing how get your own act together, then you'll actually appreciate the spiritual master. By submissively hearing from an expert spiritual master, the expert disciple develops pure knowledge, which repeals the onslaught of material illusion arising from the three modes of material nature. So we'll think, I'm not advancing, so therefore it's the spiritual master's fault. But here it points out, you have to have both. Right? Like that. It's one machine. The Arani is one machine. Right? Finally, this pure knowledge of itself. Finally, this pure knowledge itself ceases, just as fire ceases when the stock of fuel has been consumed. Right? So this pure knowledge, how I'm not the body and all this and all those things, that ceases. That material attraction, all that goes away because now you're situated on the transcendental platform. So that knowledge only has value up to liberation. This kind of knowledge has its value up to liberation. At liberation, then those knowledge of, that just that serving Krishna, love for Krishna, that's what then becomes the prominent. that practice, right? And it's sadhana. So this is the sadhana, how to get yourself to the liberated platform. Right? Before it was talking about how whatever platform you're in, you can connect it to Krishna. But now it's specifically pointing out that you should know the process to get to the liberated platform. Not that we're interested in liberation, because it says once you get there, then the fire of this knowledge, self-realization, burns out. Then all that's left is that of trying to attain love for Krishna. It's not about knowledge anymore. Not that you don't have the knowledge, but it's not about that. Is that, yeah. Just like, let's say, the student goes to art school and they learn all kinds of things, technical things and this and that, and hours, years and years and all that. But the point is you get to the point where you don't think about that. It's not about the knowledge. It's just that you see something, you have an idea, you can pick up the brush and it happens. Right? But those who, even afterwards, they're all going by this and that, and then they've missed the point. The regulation is only to bring you to the point of being able to paint. So sadhana bhakti is to bring you to the point of bhakti. Varnash, all these things are just to bring you to that point where then you're free from material contamination that distracts, and now you're able to perform pure devotion. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Vishwanath, you had some? Yeah, okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Shruti says, the guru is the bottom wood and the disciple is the top wood. Knowledge is the fire and teachings are the kindling stick. Right? So, you're teaching, knowledge is there, but you give it through teachings. Right? So that's that middle stick. But what's it supposed to do? Produce fire. And that fire then burns up material existence. Because what is that fire used with the Arani? Right? Taittiriya Upanishad 113, yeah. Right? So that's then what you're trying to get. And so, and that fire will be used for sacrifice. What's sacrifice meaning? Surrender to Lord, worshipping the Lord. So that's what it brings you to. It destroys ignorance and brings you to the worship of the Lord. That's sacrifice. So the Vedic yajna and all these things, that's what it's actually for. So it's the same principle, even if you're not doing yajnas, you're just chanting. It's the same principle. It's always about being absorbed in the Lord. Service to the Lord. So that's why it's Samkirtan yajna. It's still a yajna. Oh, not this Saturday. Saturday week is the Purnima?
Yes.
Yeah, so then they'll start the elephant procession, so they're pairing. The natives are getting restless right there. Preparing for the Krishna. Knowledge is compared to fire. Vidya, very pure knowledge coming from the Lord, destroys Maya made of avidya. Ignorance in the form of the imposition of the subtle and gross bodies, the bondage of samsara. After destroying, so that the bondage of samsara is the gross and subtle bodies. So only if you engage that in Krishna's service do you get out of that. But to think that no, we'll cultivate those things and that will get us out. No, it's only connecting to Krishna will get you out. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. After destroying its qualities as well, vidya itself is destroyed just as fire goes out when fuel is exhausted. Right? So now this discussion applies where? Where is this actually happening? Means if we're talking Shraddha to Prema, where is this happening? Bhava. Okay? Now there's no problem? Okay. Right? So that's what we're discussing, is how to attain the position of bhava. What is the sadhana for that? And we see it's not something external. It's a matter of the consciousness. But being detached, being non-possessive, all these things are just to burn up the material existence. Because once you get to the platform of bhava, then it's just about absorbing yourself in Krishna. So that absorption in Krishna that one's doing all through one's sadhana, that remains. And this other aspect is that you're seeing that all the qualities in that, so that it doesn't get in the way. In other words, if we're proud, that makes us forget Krishna. If we're not humble, it makes us forget Krishna. If we have possessiveness, that makes us forget Krishna. We're attached to the mundane, it makes us forget Krishna. So that's the point of always remember Krishna. Those are the direct activities. Never forget means the secondary aspects are all connected to Krishna, and we have the qualities necessary to be able to function. Right? Does that make sense? But bhakti, being independent, is not dependent upon this secondary. Right? Yeah. Then by pure bhakti, which has also been practiced along with vidya, jnana mistra bhakti, one attains shantarati, and then residence on the planet of the Lord, it is said, right? Because shantarati means now you actually appreciate the Lord. Then from that platform, now you can develop a particular relationship. You can't develop a relationship with anyone or anything unless you appreciate it. Right? Yeah. The practitioners of austerity who attain shantarati are those persons who worship the Lord while practicing yukta vairagya without giving up the desire for liberation, since obstacles to bhakti are destroyed by attaining liberation. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.1.15. However, jnanis who perform bhakti secondarily, bhakti mistra jnana, right? Not jnana mistra bhakti, after the destruction of avidya and vidya, merge into paramatma by their jnana arising through their secondary bhakti. Right? So that's why we follow jnana mistra bhakti, not bhakti mistra jnana. Right? So that's why when someone says, no, knowledge is important, or bhakti mistra karma, no, but we have to be expert at these knowledge and skills, then everything. This is bhakti mistra karma. It's all about karma. And we know that, you know, karma on its own is a problem, so we mix a little bhakti to make it work good. Does that make sense? Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Only by bhakti can a person know me as Brahman. Then, knowing me as Brahman, by that bhakti he merges with me. Bhagavad Gita 18.55. So, but what is him?
Jnana mishra bhakti is actually buddhi yoga, no? We can say.
Jnana mistra, karma mistra, all this, it's all together. What Krishna has given in the first six chapters of Gita, that applied together. You're studying the parts separately.
Yes.
Just like you can teach someone how to stir the vegetable. You can show them how to make a chaunce. You can show them how you put water and you boil and how you add spices. But the point is the recipe, you do all that. But you study that as separate things. Okay, today we're going to learn how to make a chaunce. Right? Does that make sense? So that's how it works. But we're studying like that just so we understand, but it's used together. So when you're pointing out within Buddha Yoga, when you're talking about the jnana aspect, that's then this jnana mistra bhakti. Okay?
Thank you.
So only by bhakti can a person know Krishna as Brahman. Means he's the person who's Brahman. Right? Then through anything then through Brahman, they can see Krishna. You can say, well, we're not interested. But then the point is then, okay, go chant, then you're with Krishna, or go over to the temple. But then everything else that you're dealing with, then what is that? We're seeing it as Maya. And which is fine. But the point is here it's been described that you can see everything connected to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Right, it's colder now, so we put on something to create warmth. So that, what's the point? What's that warmth? Oh, well, you know, it's the wool, it's the this, it's that. But where does that potency come that it's in wool? Krishna. So you could say Krishna is the warmth of, you know, warming ability in wool. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, and why is it that sheep, they just keep growing? I saw a picture the other day of a sheep who had disappeared from the flock out into the wild for like 6 years. And he came back, the guy was like, you know, 2 meters around. You know, you could just kind of just see his nose sticking out. He was this huge ball of fluff, right? Because they're meant to be sheared every year. Like that. So that's it. You know, so what does that mean? Why did they find him after 6 years? Because after 6 years, he couldn't function. So he just comes back, right? You know, like that. Before that, for 6 years, yeah, I'm the man, right? But then after that, he's going, like, I can't even, you know, do anything. Right? Yeah, okay. Verses 14 to 34, refutation of materialistic philosophies. Do you understand what it says, what we're meaning here? So this is 1855, right? That's Sarvadharma, no? Or no, that's the one before. The one before, yeah. No, that's 66. Yeah, okay. I was getting 1860, yeah. Hastings, yes. Yes. Verses 14 to 34, refutation of materialistic philosophies. Sri Krishna continued, "My dear Uddhava, I have thus explained to you perfect knowledge. There are philosophies, however, who challenge my conclusion." Right? So that's the thing. What he's given, that's knowledge. That's Vedanta. Because Vedanta means the end of the anta of Veda. Mm-hmm. So what Krishna gives, that is the conclusion. But he's saying, but there's other philosophers who challenge this. Yes. They have their own conclusion.
Wow. Hmm. So that's the six philosophers.
Yes, that's the six philosophers. That's the whole thing. And then from there, then by the modes, then you get all the others. You know, bits and pieces here and there. You mix and match, and you know, fusion cooking, and, you know, all that, and you end up with all these other things. Right. They state that the natural position of the living entity is to engage in fruitive activities. And they see him as the enjoyer of the happiness and unhappiness that accrue from his own work. According to this materialistic philosophy, the world, time, the revealed scriptures, and the self are all variegated and eternal, existing as a perpetual flow of transformations. Knowledge, moreover, cannot be one or eternal, because it arises from the different and changing forms of objects. Thus, knowledge itself is always subject to change, which makes it easy, because then if you defeat it in the philosophy, then they'll come up with something else. Even if you accept such a philosophy, my dear Uddhava, there will still be perpetual birth, death, old age, and disease. So, not that we're not saying that, yes, the principles of all these things, knowledge and everything, are eternal. But the point is, their manifestation is temporary. Therefore, if you accept such a philosophy, you will be subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. You won't solve that. You might have a better... You might go through the whole thing in a nicer way. But the point is, it doesn't matter how nice it is, it's still death that doesn't work so easy. Right? Does that make sense? It's not that, okay, you have $2,000 in the bank and you're dying, and so there's a problem. But now if you have $1 billion in the bank, no, then it's easy to go. Does that make sense? So it doesn't work. It just makes it worse. Okay. Since all living entities must accept a material body subject to the influence of time. Right? So because of that, then there's always going to be suffering. So it doesn't matter what your philosophy is, how you come up about it, what you're going to get from it, how nice it's going to be, you're still going to have to go through birth and death. And so for the soul, who is eternal, as a manifestation, therefore then, you know, these other things, having temporary manifestation, aren't going to satisfy. So, yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi ki.